Save big money on your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Ready?
This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
World Cup continues rolling on. And I gotta say, man, it's not that it's getting to be like a slog at all. It's that we're really getting into the meat of this tournament now, and it's starting to see like the dynamic nature of World Cup soccer, where you think after game day one in a group, you're like, all right, I know who sucks and who's good. And then they have a second game day and you're like, oh, totally wrong.
I know nothing about anything.
I was completely wrong. And then there's going to be the third one. We're getting into those starting this week. And some of that is stuff we'll probably anticipate. There's still going to be plenty of surprises, I am quite sure. So into all of that, we will delve today as we get into it. Four games that we had happen today on November 27th. Japan, Costa Rica, Belgium, Morocco, Croatia, Canada, and Spain, Germany. All of those had some pretty good juice to them.
I was going to say, before we get into anything, going into the games, again, you had Japan who came from behind against Germany to shock them. You had Spain win 7-0 over Costa Rica. You had Belgium pull a rabbit out of their hat against Canada, who looked great. You had Morocco draw Croatia, which was one of the more, I mean, it was a fine game, but it was kind of boring to watch. Like, Croatia weren't that inspiring. And then you had Croatia and Canada, and with the Canadian coach saying, yep, we're going to F them.
Yeah,
no, we're gonna F Croatia. So yeah, like, yeah, it was a good day to watch, because you thought you had at least going into this day, Bone, I did. I'm like, I have a pretty good temperature of what's going on.
Right. So then we start off the day with Japan and Costa Rica. And like you, I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Japan looked so impressive in how they weathered the storm against Germany. And then they found a way to just hang in there, and suddenly they counterpunched and got two goals after being down a goal for most of that game. We thought, okay, Japan taking on Costa Rica, no issues. They'll win this game, right? Not only did they not win this game, they changed the lineup. The tactics they ran out looked like they were almost trying to lull Costa Rica to sleep. Now, I'm not sure that I would necessarily accuse Japan's management of doing this, but it almost kind of felt like they said, yeah, we know we can beat Costa Rica with backups, so that's what we're going to attempt to do. Like, maybe that wasn't exactly what they were saying to themselves, but from the outside looking in, that's kind of how it appeared. And what do you know? Costa Rica had different plans, and they get a goal late in this one, getting the winner, 1-0, beating Japan. Impressive stuff that Costa Rica is able to, after just getting laughed almost out of the tournament with their first game with Spain. Everyone's saying, well, it's Qatar and them, probably the two worst teams in this thing.
Right.
And now they go out and beat a team in Japan that was the darling after week one. So never say die attitude for Costa Rica. I liked it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty impressive game. I'll be 100% honest with you. I wasn't waking up on 5 a.m. Wasn't waking up at 5 a.m. To watch this. So caught the expedited highlights, and it was, like you said, I mean, Japan kind of dominated the game. It was kind of reversed the script of what happened to them against Germany, right? Like, they had some chances, and they just weren't able to kind of take them. They dominated the game in possession, and then out of nowhere, beautiful shot by Fuller, beats the Japanese keeper. And you could see, too, I mean, he stretched literally as physically far as his body would go. the Japanese keeper did, and it was just right over the fingertip. And so they get the goal in the 81st minute. But how about the mental resolve? And I know that you liked Costa Rica more than I did coming into this tournament. And then we saw the Spain game, and we're like, I don't really know. I still don't really like them. Then they're right. going against Japan, who had all the momentum in the world. I mean, what a job by them for, I mean, kind of rallying the troops and saying, no, we're not going to let ourselves die in this tournament here on the second match day. We're not going to roll over for anybody. Like, what resolve they had.
Yeah, really did. And it was really impressive to see. I mean, Costa Rica, this is CONCACAF, man. This is kind of the stuff that we like to tell ourselves CONCACAF can be at times, is that you can have these plucky teams that can weather the storm, give up some possession, but tough it out and find a way to get a goal. That's what, I mean, you've been hoping with the U.S., right? Where, you know, with England, it wasn't that the U.S. was giving up all the possession. They were, I thought, the more dominant team. But still, you knew England was the better side. So you hope that it would go 0-0 for a while, and then the U.S. would get something in the 80th minute, and maybe that would just break the will of England and let it be a winner. Right. Instead, you got the draw, which is fine. Costa Rica actually was able to do more of what we're talking about there, where they played Germany even for 80 minutes, even though Costa Rica had Japan even for 80 minutes as far as the scoreline, but Japan had a lot of the play, and then Costa Rica gets a goal. Kaiser Fuller gets the goal and scores for them, and off we go. There you go. Changing up that whole bracket. So
they had one shot on goal the entire game, and that one shot on goal went in the back of the net.
You know what? That is called efficiency. Some might say that's a lack of firepower. I'd say that's efficiently using the firepower you have. That's the way I'd look at that one. So we'll keep this one. Group E, we'll stay right there, because Germany and Spain now also played today, and that was the one that was at the end of the day, but we'll get to the other Group F action in a second. Spain, Germany tie 1-1 in this game, and it's something that is a little weird to see from Spain. I guess not totally, given that they have a 7-goal differential, and they pretty much know with 2 draws, they're pretty likely to get in after their first win.
Sure.
But Germany's the toughest opponent they're going to face this entire stretch, you would think. Now they get the draw out of Germany. Certainly not what Spain, I think, would ideally want, but they're still not in a bad spot. Germany remains alive they would have remained alive anyway if they technically would have lost. They still could have been they wouldn't have been officially eliminated by this, but now they're very much in the running to be able to move on with their final matchup against Costa Rica. That assuming Germany can put something together, their problem has been they just do not have any forwards. Thomas Müller is 33 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, who was the guy that scored for them? Like, it was like Verklump or something. I can't remember what his name is. But
Fulkring.
Fulkring. Sorry, whatever. I don't mean to mock his name. I'm just saying, like, it wasn't necessarily a guy that you've heard of and you're like, oh, yeah, one of the stars of Germany. Like,
oh, yeah. Good. I know that guy. Got a ton of Fulkring jerseys in my closet.
Right. So, and I don't know. Maybe I've just, like, had a seizure and made this up, but I thought Thomas Müller at some point had retired from international soccer, and then maybe like after the Euros or before the Euros, and then he was talked back into playing. Anyway, the idea here is that he still is their best option up top, and that's not great.
So it was pretty fascinating to watch. I enjoyed the hell out of this match. it was pretty good. So they both kind of play the same systems, right? I mean, both their midfields are pretty unbelievable. And so whichever team had possession was on the ball, like, you could tell that chances were coming. And for the most part, I mean, Spain kind of dominated this game, Bone, for the first 30 minutes. And then the last 15, man, was kind of like a German tidal wave of the first half. And I believe Germany had their first free kick of the game, and Antonio Rudiger made a run, but he was ruled offside. He put the ball in the net, and unfortunately for the Germans, it got waved offside. And then you get into the second half, and you had Alvaro Morata scoring a goal for the Spaniards. I think it was the 60th, I don't know, sometime in the 60th minute. They put the ball in the back of the net, and they're up 1-0. So all of a sudden, Germany's like, well, we got to press. We got to do everything that we can. It's kind of deceiving if you look at just the possession numbers. You're like, boys, you know, Germany, we're lucky to get out of a point of it. Like, yeah, kind of, but that's what Spain does. They control the ball. They might not have the most explosive offense in the world, and that's also kind of what we've been talking about with Spain. Like, yeah, Alvaro Morata, sure, he's good, and the Spanish team have a lot of creative playmakers, but at the same time, they're kind of going through that same thing. So their talisman scores, Morata, their striker, And Germany had more opportunities in this game, though, even though they had far less of the ball. You look at Germany, they put 4 shots on target. I believe they have they had 11 shots in total as well. Missed a couple of big opportunities. And again, it goes back to what we were saying with this German team against Japan. Like, they have great opportunities to score the ball. But right now, for whatever reason, they just cannot break through. So maybe this 1-1 draw, it's going to set them up for a fantastic matchup. They've got Costa Rica, and then Japan play Spain. But if they can't put the ball in the back of the net, sure. I mean, they can win, you know, 1-0, or they can tie 0-0, whatever. And they look fantastic doing it. But just the inability for them to put the ball in the net is a serious concern for them.
Yeah, totally agreed. The way Group E now sets up, Spain is on 4 points, Japan and Costa Rica both with 3. Obviously, goal differential for Costa Rica, problematic with minus 6. So that's not great. And Germany still alive with their 1 point. Their matchups, of course, in the next match day will be Spain taking on Japan and Germany taking on Costa Rica. Don't know how to really read that Japan team at this point, you know? Like,
yeah, especially going up against Spain now as well.
Yeah, I don't think Spain is nearly as bad as what, you know, I mean, you would think their firepower is somewhere in between 7 goals a game and the one they managed today against a much, you know, right. What you would think is a much determined Germany side, right? Like, as much as we talked about offensively, Germany having trouble scoring, Spain's, I mean, the midfield for Germany is still good. Defensively, they're still solid. Like, Spain still had to contend with all that. It's not so much about, you know, Germany just sucks. It's that Spain needed to break down that entire team. I think Japan's a little easier to break down, but again, they're going to be fighting for their lives. They want to stay in this World Cup. They think they've squandered an opportunity against Costa Rica.
So. Yeah, and remember, 4 years ago, they didn't make it out of the group stage either.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
So obviously not living up to expectations. The really cool thing, though, today from that match is, like, you see the future of soccer and where it's going. And Meredith doesn't watch a ton, but, you know, she'll watch, like, if it's on TV. And I'm like, remember these guys' names. I'm like, Pedri, Gavi, and Musiala. She was like, why would I need to know that? I'm like, they're the 3 best players in the field. Pedri might be 20, but all 3 of them are 19 or 20 years old. And I'm like, remember 4 years ago when this Kylian Mbappe guy came on the scene? Like, just those guys are kind of going to be fast-tracked to being those kind of players. No, they're obviously different positions than what they play. But those 3 players, the youngest players in the teams, were the best players in the field, I thought, today for all 22 players on the field, Bone. And that was pretty impressive. So if you're looking ahead to decision day in this group, it's kind of convoluted. So if Germany beat Costa Rica just by a single goal, so if they just win the match, and Japan draws against Spain, then the qualification will be decided by the number of goals scored. If Germany wins by 2 or more goals, and Japan draws or loses, Germany will qualify. So it's very confusing.
Yeah, that's that's a lot of math that I'm not ready for right this point. But yeah, it's going to be that's what makes this all very interesting, right? Like, that's why they play those games at the same time, because everyone's going to be scoreboard watching and trying to do their best to go out there and obviously play their game, but also they're going to have an eye to what's happening in the other team's matchups. So keep an eye on those 2 games as they come later on this upcoming week. Let's switch to Group F now, because there was tons of intrigue in this one too. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with your guy Alphonso Davies becoming the first Canadian male to score in a World Cup? And let's just end that for Canada. That was a nice highlight. Let's just only talk about that. Or do you want to go talk about...
It was within the first 2 minutes of the game.
Well, right. And all right, let's start with Canada-Croatia, okay? Because Croatia won this game 4-1. After we mentioned yesterday, John Herdman, the head coach for Canada, said, we're going to F Croatia. Like... Yeah. And at first, I thought he was just saying it more like, oh, just go, you know, just F whoever. Like, we're Canada, which is what he was trying to get to. But he literally was like, put it out of your mind what just happened here against Belgium. We're going to go F Croatia. And it's like, okay, then. If you were wondering, the Croatian players did not miss those comments. They were very aware of them. So did you see what Kramaric had to say after the game?
I did see what he had to say after the game, and you and I were talking about it, and I loved it from the Canadian coach. I loved it from John Herdman. If I was a Canadian, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds awesome. But if I'm Croatian, here's what Kramaric said. He goes, I want to thank the Canada coach for the motivation. In the end, Croatia demonstrated who effed whom.
Listen, I wish I could. I mean, again, I don't know if that was translated or not. I kind of want that to be in English, and then I hope that that's how good he speaks English, just because like, we demonstrated right. who effed whom. But either way, pretty great.
I don't even know the who and whom debate.
No.
And I've been speaking English for 30 years of my life.
Yeah, true enough. Herdman, by the way, was asked after the game, did he have any regrets? And he said, not in the first 20 minutes, no. Yeah, right on. And then Croatia dialed it up and see ya. So Canada, their World Cup is over. They have one more game, obviously, but they cannot
advance.
They're
done.
They are out of this group.
By the way, they lost 4-1. I don't know if we said that.
Oh, yeah. They lost 4-1 to Croatia. Croatia routed them. It was not close. And that was, I mean, after the early part of that game, you thought maybe it was going to be, because Canada gets a goal right off the bat, and you think, oh, maybe this is what's happening. But no, that was a pretty clear-cut victory and decisive victory for Croatia.
Every time Canada gave the ball up, it was just a odd number fast break for Croatia, like every time.
And that's just not something that Canada can.
Not against them. You can't do that against them.
No, they can't. But they can't weather a lot of teams that have that amount of talent running at them and that level of experience and all that other stuff. By the way, I found something odd about what Herdman said after the game. So he had these quotes where he said, I think there's respect for Croatia. As I keep saying, we're here to push as far as we can. He said, you know, I'll take that one on the chin, but I think we showed in those first 25 minutes that little Canada can compete with the world. I went and, because I thought, like, maybe I'm crazy, but I don't think Canada is little Canada compared to Croatia. And I don't mean landmass. I mean, like, you know, because we always talk about the amount of population you have. I guess that doesn't totally matter in the world of soccer, right? But just for comparative purposes, Croatia has 3.89 million people. Canada has 38 million people. Like, they're not smaller in any measurement. Landmass, population, I mean, amount of hockey player, like, they're all, like, there's more of them in Canada. So I don't know.
Our best hockey athletes played soccer.
Right. God, that gets so annoying. And again, if you're new to soccer and you've maybe like, well, yeah, why is that a bad thing? Because it insinuates that, like, Christian Pulisic is a terrible athlete and we just got some beer leaguer to show up and play soccer. Like, there are great athletes playing soccer for the U.S. There are great athletes playing soccer for Canada. Sure, there are also some great athletes playing hockey in Canada or playing basketball in the U.S. But I don't. People who think LeBron James would come in and save you because he's 6'8 and 260 pounds, don't think that. You see a lot of 6'8, 260 pound guys dominating soccer. All these countries have guys that big. They don't all have guys that can play soccer because 6'8, 260 isn't the ideal body type. Dirk Nowitzki loves soccer and he was German. And they told him to go get a basketball and leave the soccer to the short, tiny dudes. That's how that worked. Just because you're big doesn't mean you can play. Anyway, but yeah, I just thought this idea that, like, I know what he means because Canada is small in their
right.
World
they're
Cup.
They're in their infant. Yes, yes. In their infancy of
this is
being
the first time they've
nation.
Scored a goal in the World Cup and the first time they've been there in damn near 40 years. Right. So I get it. Like, he's making the point that little old Canada that just got kind of started of being a good team again. But it's not the same thing. Right. You are not a little country by any stretch of the imagination. This is. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, there you go. So you've got one more match there to talk about in that group, and we will do so. That is Morocco and Belgium, which you want to talk about some guys who are listening to things. The Belgian players are also hearing things, but they're not getting the same motivation that Croatia did. Because have you noticed how many Belgian players, like Kevin De Bruyne has brought this up, a few other guys have said it, even after the game, Belgium loses this game to Morocco. And so after the game, I forget which Belgian player was asked about it, but it was essentially maybe we just the comments they've been saying are, well, we're too old, so we probably can't win the World Cup. Like, Kevin De Bruyne has said that.
And I think then it was Jan Vertonghen had.
Yes, Vertonghen is the one who. That's okay. Right. Vertonghen said, like, well, maybe we just couldn't keep up with them because we're too old. It's like, that's not funny when you actually. That is the big question now, isn't it? Like, you should be worried if you're Belgium.
They look disheveled. They are. So I was wrong about them. I'm like, you know what? this team is probably their last go-around with the Golden Generation. We can talk about Roberto Martinez and how long he's been the coach of Belgium and if he has failed doing his job, and which I don't know. I mean, it's Belgium. You know, they haven't really had any more success than they're having right now in this run with this current generation of players. I look totally past their form. I'm like, they'll get it ramped up. They'll get it good to go. They are a shell of what they were in 2018 for the World Cup. They just, I mean, they got pounded by Morocco in this latter stages of the game, and then they kind of keyed it up a little bit and then got burned on the counterattack to give up a second goal. Like, they're, I don't know, man. Courtois, one of the best goalies in the world, obviously playing for Real Madrid. He's a superstar. He lets in a free kick from Ziyech that he probably saves 99 times out of 100. Took a weird bounce in front of him, couldn't handle it. And then from there, like, mentally, they just poof, like, collapsed.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think it's just because Lukaku's not out there. Like, there's more to this, right? Like, I think you also have to question tactically what Roberto Martinez is doing, right?
Yeah.
Because he's had to switch things up a little bit. He had some weird formation he was running out there. It was like a 3-4-2-1 in their first game. And then they had like a hybrid back three, kind of back four. It would morph during the game. And then now they kind of switch things up to a more like standardized 4-5-1, 4-2-3-1, however you want to look at that. And it put Eden Hazard back centrally, but so what? Like, it's still, I mean, they're not playing well. Belgium is not. And I, you know what? We've spent a lot of time saying that about Belgium in this little podcast here, but we should give tons of credit to Morocco being really good. Like,
correct.
Ziyech, like you said, has been just a monster for them. Even if he doesn't have the goal scoring numbers, like, he's setting up things left and right for them. He keeps putting them in dangerous spots. Their whole team feeds off of how well he's been playing. And yeah, Morocco is in a great spot now. They truly, I think, have
by the way, if they get to the round of 16, watch out for them. Like, if in case you haven't watched any Morocco,
oh my gosh,
this World Cup, like, they're a team to be like, oh, dark horse team, because they, when they're on their day, like you said, when Ziyech is going and you've got Hakimi as well back there, like, oof, they're pretty terrifying.
Yeah. They're, I'm just saying, man, like, with Morocco and Croatia, it's not all done here, right? Like, Croatia still has to get past Belgium, and Belgium is not out of anything. But if they don't unlock that Croatia, you know, kind of what they've become now, where they're just motivated, they're playing fiercely, like, they're not backing down from anyone, Croatia. And they're looking at Belgium going, they're right for the picking.
Oh, of course.
Belgium easily can get bounced in this tournament. Morocco, meanwhile, like, they're looking at it going, if Belgium and Croatia tie, we can win the group. You know, right. Even if that doesn't happen, they could potentially
Even if they get a point, regardless of what happens the other game, they get a point. They're through the next round.
Oh, yeah. They only have to tie Canada, Morocco does, to get through. But Morocco probably is looking at this like, we need to also, you know, F Canada instead of right. F-ing Croatia as Canada wanted to. Like, Morocco's probably just looking at it like, we need to go take 3 points from Canada and be fully in form as we go and hopefully win the group and move on. Because, who would they face coming out? They would face the second. If they win, they face the second place team out of Group E, and then vice versa if they come in second. So who knows what that's going to be with the Spain, Japan whole mess there.
Yeah, right.
Germany still in the mix. Like, you don't know what you're getting out of that. So your probably best bet is just win the group and hope you play the crappiest team out of Group E that gets it through. I mean, that's the way I would go about it, obviously, if you're in Morocco's position. But they're playing as well as anybody right now in the World Cup. So, and obviously Croatia isn't playing bad either. So that's a hell of a little group there going on. Pretty exciting stuff.
It was fun, man. I had a fantastic time watching those games. I felt so bad for Canada too. And then I like compartmentalized the comments that Herdman made. I'm like, maybe just don't do that.
Well,
next time.
Right. I mean, I don't blame him for being hyped for his team. It's a big deal, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, maybe next time just leave that one maybe a little bit less unsaid. Keep that in the locker room if you can. But all right, we'll take a break, come back, and tell you what is on tap for Monday's action in the World Cup. You're listening to Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaptic Italian Village. Here's what's on tap in the World Cup for Monday as we get rolling with groups G and H. How many groups are there? I'm so screwed
Eight
up.
Eight groups,
now.
G and H. You're
G and
correct.
H. I got it right. Okay, because I thought we were just talking about E and F, so we should be on, GNH, whatever. The point is, here we go. You've got four matchups tomorrow. Cameroon and Serbia start us off 5 a.m. for that one. South Korea and Ghana at 8 a.m. Brazil and Switzerland, that's one that I have my eye on just because anytime Brazil's playing, I'm very interested in this Brazil team. You've got the Neymar situation with his ankle. Switzerland is not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. Brazil had a ton of chances but couldn't seem to bury as many of them as they thought they would, and it took a bicycle kick to get them one of their two goals in this tournament so far. So what do they look like in this match day? I'm very curious about. And then Portugal-Uruguay should be a very good matchup as well. This is what we want in the World Cup. There's four good matchups here, I feel like.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Your 5 a.m. game for tomorrow, I would imagine that you're going to see a lot of panic in these two teams. So remember, Brazil beating Serbia on that first match day, and then Switzerland pulling a rabbit out of the hat against Cameroon. So both these teams, between Cameroon and Serbia, are on no points, so I feel like 3 points are going to be at a premium. 1 point probably isn't going to be enough to be able to get it done as we start kind of projecting and predicting where both these teams are going to come in at. So Serbia, -2 goal differential already, and I know they were a lot of people's kind of darling picks as to, you know, to go through and make some real serious noise. Like, if that's going to be the case, then that's going to have to happen sooner rather than later, and would imagine that they're going to feel decently confident going up against this Cameroon team. You look at Mitrovic and Tadic, and I mean, just the guys that they have, right? I mean, Serbia, very, very good. We know that. And then Cameroon with, like, a better, decent display than what most people thought, at least me, coming into this tournament. And so, yeah, the 5 a.m. game tomorrow, like, heavy consequences already, like, kickstarting you out of this group early tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And if Serbia gets a win against Cameroon, that puts them on 3 points. And let's say Brazil beats Switzerland. What do we talk about in our group previews? Serbia and Switzerland, no love lost between those two teams. Right. That would be your third game. Two teams on 3 points with a round of 16 berth on the line. And then that's pretty much all that would be left decided in that final. Woof. That would be some tension, I would think, going through the ranks for that one. So, yeah, this could set up very interesting. But, of course, tomorrow we got to see what happens. You know, Cameroon could certainly throw a wrench in all that. Serbia is, a very tough team there. So those bottom two playing together, it's not like your typical bottom two, I would think, by any stretch. You could still see this be a very interesting matchup there. On the other two games we talked about, South Korea and Ghana. Right now, South Korea has the point. Ghana has none.
Ghana almost got the point off of Portugal when they almost picked it off the goalie in their... When the Portuguese goalie dropped the ball in the 99th minute.
Right.
And, I mean, it was crazy. The fact that he didn't put that away was nuts. But the fact that Ghana just kept coming back, Portugal went up one, and then Ghana would come back. Like, it was just, I don't know, man. It was kind of, one of the crazier games that I've seen so far.
Ghana was definitely surprising in that game for me. And that's why, like, I'm saying, when we talked about it before at the start of the show, like, I don't feel like I really know what to expect match day to match day. I have no idea what to pick out of this Group H right now. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
This Uruguay and Portugal matchup could easily be one that's an all-timer. It could also be a Portugal walk. It could be something. I don't know. Like, I see that going a few different ways. And South Korea-Ghana should be a very interesting matchup as well. And after this result, then we're talking about it getting particularly dicey for, certainly if Ghana doesn't get a point out of their matchup, they're probably toast. Uruguay certainly would like to come away with a point from Portugal and say, here we go, like, we're still
Uruguay
in it for the final
and
one.
South Korea in their first game was the only game in World Cup history where there were zero shots registered on target for 90 minutes.
I don't think that's going to hold, that those two teams will not register shots way out. I expect them both to put up much better fights. So, yeah, fun little matchup here coming up tomorrow for your Monday if you're maybe, I don't know, trying to just get back into your work week. Why? Why bother? Like, get the meeting out of the way you got to in the morning, and then flip on the soccer and set your inbox to, you know, do not disturb, and just go. Just enjoy it. It's a World
Cup.
That's
what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, that's right. Just don't even do the show. Just, you know, 6 o'clock rolls around.
Actually, you know what? I think I'm going to do the show tomorrow, our live local morning show, just all on the World Cup. I don't think there needs to be anything else that needs to be
addressed.
You know
what? No need to. Why talk about anything else, especially regarding college football in Ohio? over the weekend. There's no need to talk about it. Sounds good to me, Beam. Well, thanks for doing this. We will check in again on Monday with you with an update on all those games we just talked about. And, of course, we might have a little thought going into Tuesday with the matchup between the U.S. and Iran. All of that and more are coming up tomorrow on the podcast. Thanks for listening. Send us a like or a review or a favorite or a whatever your podcast app lets you do. And follow us on Twitter at Bone and Beam United. Until next time, thanks for listening to Bone and Beam United. Enjoy the soccer.